there, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Slongcast, episode 14 for Thursday, August 19th, 2010. We're a couple days late, but we're getting it out this week. Got a lot of good stuff to talk about. Lots more Facebook stories, but you know, we'll get to those in a little bit. I am your host, Kevin Slonka, and with me as usual, Ryan Lancey.
Hey, I'm enjoying my Pepsi throwback. It's delicious. It's like a routine now.
Yeah, you've been having that for the past three or four shows.
Yeah, and he's got beer in the fridge, and I turned it down for a Pepsi throwback.
Seriously, but it's been the same beer for like a couple months because I don't drink that much.
Yeah, well,
it's very hoppy beer.
Well, the one, yeah, a couple of them were.
Yeah, it's Brooklyn, and I bought a sample pack. There's four different kinds, and they're all pretty hoppy for my taste.
Yeah. You know, actually, speaking of hoppy, I had a taste, just a sample, of a Dogfish Head 120-minute aged IPA.
Just the letters IPA makes me cringe.
I'll tell you what, I'm not an IPA guy, right? You know me, I'm a little bit on the sweeter side.
Yeah.
And even like the cough medicine.
Definitely.
Flavors. Yeah. Well, this IPA, this aged IPA, hands down, one of the best beers I've ever had in my life.
Really?
Yeah. It still has that bitter flavor, but it's really mellow, and there's like a lot of other flavors.
Where'd you get it at?
It's the Southside Saloon.
Oh, is it in a bottle, or they have it on tap?
It's bottle, and it's kind of expensive because I think they aged it themselves. Like, they kept a couple cases back.
Oh, wow.
Several years, so.
I might have to try one of those next time I'm there.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, so let's get right into maybe not some tech stories, because this first one isn't really a tech story, but it's kind of funny and kind of really...
Would you classify it as religion?
Maybe.
Partially?
It's partially tech, partially religion. But so we've all heard of the Geek Squad. You know, that's Best Buy's troop of computer fixer-uppers.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can take your computer into the Geek Squad and they'll fix your stuff for you.
Basically their version of the Nerd Herd.
Exactly, the Nerd Herd. If you don't watch Chuck, go watch it.
Yes, exactly.
But in Wisconsin, this one priest decided to use that name a little bit and turn it into the God Squad instead of the Geek Squad. And he got a nice little sticker, you know, made up, and he put it on his car. Well, Best Buy decided that they were going to give him a little cease and desist. You know, stop using our name,
bitch.
Like, seriously?
I don't know. I mean, really, Best Buy? Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're trying to take any of your business. Nobody's going to take their computer to the God Squad and hope for some miracle to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is kind of just an example of like the way things have gone in society. Like religion, churches and like the clergy and the ministry, you know, was kind of like off limits. You couldn't like... you know, sue them. Well, I mean, you probably could, but people were just
you never
like,
heard of it.
Yeah, it's like, come on, the guy's just trying to do God's work. Leave him alone.
Seriously. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing really else to say about this other than really, like, I mean, Best Buy has been in the news over the past couple of years for doing stupid things, and this is just another stupid thing. But, you know, it's one of the big box stores, one of the only ones around, so you kind of have no choice if you want to buy stuff.
Yeah, well, let's boycott them.
Let's.
We should do that. We should start a boycott.
I will never go to Best Buy again.
Never. Well, not until they publicly apologize to this guy and let him use the damn name.
Yes, so Best Buy, you need to publicly apologize to Father Luke Strand at the Holy Family Parish in Fond du Lac.
Or, Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, Wisconsin.
Fond du Lac.
It's probably French or something. I probably said it completely wrong. It's probably like Fond du Lac or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Either way, you need to like make good on this.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay, so moving on. This is actually a story that both of us submitted. So, Ryan, I'll let you take this one away.
Well, this one's from Ars Technica. I was pretty, like, for the headline just, you know, threw me. So they're finding ways to hack cars through the wireless tire sensors. I don't know if anyone's familiar with some of the modern cars. They have this...
all, actually, since, like, 2008 or something.
It's called the TPMS, Tire Pressure Monitoring System. Basically, the way it works is there's this little sensor inside your tire that's connected to the valve stem, which, by the way, as a side note, has caused tire replacement to, like, skyrocket in price because they have to, like, you know, be careful they don't damage them. And
right, if they mess that thing up, that's expensive.
Yeah, and they used to replace your valve stems, like, pretty much all the time, and I don't know that they do now, and it just seems like a bunch of crap. But anyways, TPMS sensor in there. And there's a frequency that it transmits its information on back to the computer in the car. And I'm not exactly sure how it works. If it actually, somebody told me it works on actual tire rotation, like the number of rotations.
Yeah, I have no clue how it actually makes its reading.
So, like, I think that's how it works. That, you know, like if the tire deflates, it has less rolling distance, and then it can basically, it sends a number that would be, I guess, higher because it's a less diameter, and it does it at a certain interval, and that's how it knows. I'm not real sure how it works, but anyways, it's wireless, and I guess you can send, it sends that data back to the computer. Well, some researchers were able to hack the engine control unit, basically the computer in your car, by using that wireless signal.
Yeah, they were able to, not only were they able to like interfere with the signal and send their own, they were just able to like eavesdrop and, you know, totally crash the ECU in a car.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. And if you think about this, you know, we've heard of this, we've had a couple stories in the past couple weeks about people being able to hack the computers in cars via the, what's that port underneath the steering wheel?
Oh, the ODB2.
ODB2, yeah.
Onboard.
Yeah, so, you know, we know that these things are hackable, and we had some stories about OnStar and people being able to hack computers via OnStar. You know, this is just another way you get in close enough proximity. If you're driving beside a car, that might be close enough to hit this wireless signal and do some damage. Now, it goes without saying, or it doesn't go without saying, I have to say it, because it took $1,500 worth of equipment for these people to, you know, be able to hack this.
Some people, I mean, that may seem like a lot, but it's also like if you're a hacker and you're determined, it's like, hey.
Yeah, whatever. I'll spend that now.
Yeah. Let's crash some cars.
Yeah.
Or some computers in cars.
Yeah, which will in turn crash the cars.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. So, I mean, this is one thing that I've always brought up before. You know, I am always afraid the more technology we put in cars that allows things like this. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want these things to have direct access to things that could touch the engine or the gas pedal or the brakes.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Crazy.
So keeping in tune with the car situation, the Jaguar XJ Supersport, this car basically, it kind of runs all on, of course, all cars run, you know, based on their computer, but this one, kind of everything is tied into the one computer that runs, you know, the entertainment system, the ignition, everything runs off of this new advanced, you know, way that they're making the computer. And these people who had this Jaguar XJ, they had to basically reboot, disconnect the battery, you know, mm-hmm. get rid of all electricity in the car because the computer crashed and the car would not start.
Yeah, they brought out a field technician from Jaguar, and he connected up his laptop with his, you know, special software to control the car, and he was even unable to issue a reboot command.
Yeah,
his software
via the ODB2 port or via wireless,
yeah.
You know, from Jaguar servers, because the computer inside the Jaguar is supposed to be, you know, like OnStar, connect to the cloud somewhere to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the dude couldn't do anything. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's a 90,000 British pound Jag. I don't know what that would translate to in American dollars.
I don't know, like 120,000, whatever. Yeah. It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
But yeah, you know, this is, can you imagine that? I mean, we've always joked about computers blue screening, and
yeah.
Now we really have one doing it.
It's like, oh, I want to go to the grocery store. Damn it, my computer is locking up in my car. In my car. It's like, it's locking up. I can't drive anywhere.
Right. Microsoft, did you push Windows updates?
Yeah.
Service Pack 3. Yeah, ridiculous.
You know what, though? I mean, even independent of computers, cars have had like security-type measures, I think, in the past that have prevented, you know, you from driving the car if it malfunctioned. Like, those keys with the crazy chip in them,
right?
Which I guess is kind of a computer, but it's just an RF sensor, right?
Yeah.
So like, I've seen it where those like don't read right and the car won't start, and you know, and then back in the day you had like the steering wheel column that would lock and stuff, and like the old mechanisms would get like jammed up, and sometimes you couldn't get the key to turn, and you couldn't drive anywhere, or you could drive somewhere but you couldn't steer, which is dangerous.
You can only make left turns.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess it's not like a new thing. I mean, heck, it could just be that you're like carburetor flooded and you can't drive anywhere.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely not new. It's just...
Would you say that modern cars are like, even with the computerized technology, is probably still more reliable?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you can.
Yeah, I would say that is, they have definitely helped more than they have hurt.
Yeah.
But the ways that they are hurting seem that they can damage you worse.
It's like single points of failure, yeah. Catastrophic type things.
Right. It's like
no brakes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the way they break nowadays, it's not just, oh, you lose your headlights. It's, oh, you know, your engine shuts off and you lose your brakes. You know, yeah. It's bad braking now.
Yeah. I think the thing about the automobile industry that's a lot different, well, it's similar to another industry that doesn't have as many problems, I don't think. And that's the airline industry.
Thank heavens.
Yeah, I mean, the redundancy in an airplane is like, it's usually like quad redundancy. So that's like required by the FAA. So like that type of stuff just doesn't happen. There's like, you know, built-in tests, equipment, and they, you know, reroute signals if data buses are not working. And so like even a Cessna, like a Cessna 172,
right.
It has, it doesn't actually even use a spark plug or a, not a spark plug, what's it called? The thing that generates the spark. There's a coil.
Okay.
There's no electronic coil. It actually uses a magneto, and there's like four of them in there. And
the X-Man?
Yeah, exactly. A magneto is basically something that, based on spinning motion, generates like electricity. And so there's like four of them in the engine, and if all but one go down, that one can drive all the cylinders. They're like all wired up in quad redundancy.
That's actually pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wonder. I mean, it's probably way more expensive to add that kind of redundancy to personal vehicles, but...
Yeah, maybe at least double redundancy.
Yeah. I mean, I've been thinking that same sort of thing. You know, you look at NASCAR cars, and they have, you know, the roll cage.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have cars nowadays, if they flip on their roof, you're dead because the roof just caves in.
Yeah,
how much more expensive could it be to put a roll cage in every car?
Well, I think it comes down to weight. You know, I mean, we want high fuel economy standards, and if you make the car lighter, you can't have stuff like that in there.
Yeah. Yeah, why don't you just make carbon fiber cars and put a roll cage in? That takes care of it.
Carbon fiber would probably work.
Although, really expensive.
Yeah, exactly. I like the idea of expandable foam, like in Demolition Man, remember that?
Yes.
It was awesome.
I like that. Let's make that happen.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so finally getting into some a normal computer technology. An article here from the International Business Times. Title of the article, Microsoft May Back Off of .NET Languages. Now, when I first saw this, I thought, holy crap, Microsoft is taking .NET and saying we're getting rid of it. But obviously not the case.
I jumped to the same conclusion as well, and I think the International Business Times is a little guilty of some headline.
They definitely got a lot of readership based on that headline.
Yeah, I mean, because otherwise, so I guess the key here is that it's dynamic languages.
Yeah, so it's all of the other languages that can use .NET, such as Iron Ruby, which is a version of Ruby that, you know, runs on .NET, and Iron Python. So it's not .NET languages like C# or J# or VB.NET. It's other languages, you know, Iron Python, Iron Ruby.
Or my favorite, F#.
Ooh, F#. Yeah, whatever happened to that?
It's still around.
Is it?
Yeah, it's actually, I think it's official now in .NET 4.0.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, F# is a functional programming language.
Yeah, I heard about that a while ago, and I looked into it, and then it never went anywhere, and I just kind of gave up. But either way... So Microsoft is basically saying, you know, we're kind of not going to work with these anymore. They used to actually, you know, have their own programmers develop for these and make sure that these other languages worked well with .NET. And now they're just kind of like, you guys can do it yourself. So what do you think this points to with them? Do you think they're trying to push their own languages and only their own languages and get rid of all these other things? Or, like, what do you think the reasoning behind this is?
Well, I'm not real well-versed in dynamic programming languages, but I believe there's, like, an example might be, is that, like a generic example, like Cold Fusion? Is that a dynamic language?
I don't know much about Cold Fusion other than I never want to use it.
I don't even really know that much about them. I don't know.
Well, basically,
it says at the bottom here, it seems that Microsoft wants to turn to PHP and other such options for dynamic and open source languages. So maybe they're going to embrace some just like already established technologies.
Yeah, that seems like the way they're going. Because, I mean, the way it seems, I don't know much about Iron Ruby or Iron Python, but what it seems like to me is that those languages, you write in Ruby or Python, and when it gets compiled in .NET. So you don't have to know .NET to write in .NET. You could be a Ruby programmer, and Iron Ruby is your translation or your middleman programming language to get into .NET.
See, that's weird because, I mean, I think that's how C# works. So
yeah, I mean, all of the .NET languages kind of work like that, where, you know, it's intermediate language. So you write it in C# or VB.NET, it gets compiled to intermediate language, and then that gets run on your system.
Right.
So yeah, they all kind of do that. But I don't know. I think Microsoft is dropping the ball on this a little bit because these languages were, you know, gateway languages for other open source developers to start using .NET. Are you really going to see Python programmers move to .NET now that Iron Python isn't being developed? You know?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I think they're losing out on a bunch of people. But either way, you know, we'll see what happens with that, whether the open source community picks them up and keeps them going, like the Mono people did, making their open source version of .NET, or what happens with these, who knows?
It says here, I was just reading about the dynamic language runtime from Microsoft, and it says it's an ongoing effort to bring a set of services that run on top of the CLR, the common language runtime. So I think the CLR is like the C++, C#. I think those...
Well, that's the normal.
Right, those are CLR. So this dynamic, it said some of the supported languages of the dynamic runtime language framework is, they say Iron Ruby, Iron Python, and they plan to use a DLR for Visual Basic .NET 10 and managed JScript. But
ooh.
So I don't know. I'm not a real strong programming languages guy. You know, I don't know a lot of that's one of my weaknesses.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there. Not about you, but about me.
Yeah.
You know, as far as programming languages go, if I have to write something for the web, I write it with PHP, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if I have to write something for a desktop, I would prefer to use C++, but I probably use C# just because the whole .NET framework has all the code written for me. And that's one thing I hate, but I kind of use it anyways.
Oh, C# rocks.
Yeah. I just don't like the whole framework idea, no matter what the language is, Microsoft or not. I don't like having, you know, even Java. I don't like having everything written for you. But either way, moving on.
Yep.
Get away from the programming languages. A new thing that I actually haven't heard of before is WiMAX 2. Have you heard of that?
I barely heard of WiMAX 1.
Most people haven't. I mean, WiMAX isn't really heavily deployed. You know, there's a couple companies, Clear has their WiMAX service, which actually is in a
Clearwire.
Yeah.
Clearwire.
Yeah, Clear is the company. Clearwire is the service.
I see.
And they're actually in a bunch of bigger cities. But now Intel is releasing the WiMAX 2 standard, whereas regular WiMAX was supposedly only 3 to 6 megabits. WiMAX 2 is supposed to get over 100 megabits. So it looks like what Intel is trying to do is kind of stop LTE from moving into the mainstream as fast as it is.
Yeah, it's... I mean, this is really interesting because these are some really fast... Like, 100 megabits is, even today, I think is really fast for long-distance wireless technology.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, we've had 100 megabit Ethernet for, what, 15 years?
Long time.
Yeah, but... maybe even longer. And, you know, gigabit's becoming pretty much standard on all computers. But the routers are barely there yet.
Right, right.
But that said, like 100 megabit, that crushes most ISP, most ISP speed as, you know, right now. And does anybody really see by 2012, like maybe Johnstown would have Fios. A lot of places do. And Fios is capped at like, what, 45?
It all depends on the provider. You know, they can give you burst up to 60. I mean, fiber, you know, you can go like 10 gigabits.
Well, yeah, so, but I mean, what's out there?
What are they giving
sale?
You? Yeah. I think 60 is the max that I've heard of over fiber.
Because the one thing I wonder too about Fios is if the speed, I know the fiber itself can probably handle a faster speed, but a lot of times the transceivers on each end are what limit it.
Right.
And that's, you know, are they going to, if it's limited, I don't know what it's limited to, but, it, you know, they'd have to roll out new transceivers.
Yeah, those are the expensive things to replace.
Exactly. Easy, but expensive.
Right.
But, you know, what I see happening here with this WiMAX 2, I think maybe the wireless speeds are getting reliable and fast enough that we may see a real slowdown in wireline services for the internet.
Yeah, I mean, my home internet that we're using right now is WiMAX, WiMAX version 1. And, you know, if you don't know the way WiMAX works, you have an antenna that is, you know, normally outside your house, but now they have bigger antennas that you mount on the underside of your roof, like in your attic. And they need line of sight to the nearest cell tower that has the WiMAX receivers or whatever antennas. And, you know, that's how you get your internet service. You know, other than that, it's just like normal internet. You can still plug in a router or use multiple computers, whatever. But I've had it for almost 3 years now. And the only time I've had trouble is when my neighbor's tree started growing this past year and got in the way. You know, other than that, rain hasn't hurt it.
Did you go burn it down?
I might have to. I called my ISP. They came out and put up my antenna another foot so that it can now see over the tree. But come next summer, when that tree grows some more, I either have to go over there and nicely ask them to chop off the top of the tree or see if I can reposition the antenna. But yeah, that's
WiMAX in the 2.5 gig band, like they were saying in this article, or is it different? Because I was thinking it was like 900 or something.
To be honest, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'd have to look at the specs of the antenna.
It would make sense if it is 2.5 that a tree would interfere. Like, you know, lower frequencies would make it through. But once you hit, like, especially right around the frequency, I think, of water.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, that's...
It's the water that kills
it. That's when, like, trees and stuff really...
Yeah, I mean, and the point I was getting at is that most people probably think, oh, you know, wireless, it's not going to be good. You know, storms are going to affect it. I've never had my internet go down because of snow or a storm or anything.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Cool. It works.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, which provider do you have
again? It started out as being a Camcon Cambria Connect.
Oh, okay.
And that was done through a Precision Business Systems out of Ebensburg, but they sold their part of the ISP to In the Sticks Broadband.
Oh.
So it's still the Camcon system, which is the Cambria County EMS implemented WiMAX, and I don't want to say sublet or whatever they did. They sold, you know, out to ISPs to give that to residential users. So yeah, it's using the Camcon network. And it works fine. I have 3 megabits down and almost 3 megabits up. So that's amazing. You know, most people, even if they have the 16 megabit down cable, don't have 3 megabits up.
Yeah.
So that's helpful, at least for me, you know, uploading this podcast all the time, you know, lots of big files.
You know, a little side note, I have my email open because Kevin sends me the show notes. And I got this funny message from Comcast the other week, and it said that they had increased my internet speeds to like 1.5 megabit.
Whoa.
Yeah. It was like, woo. I'm like, that's fast. I'm like, A, that's not fast, and B, I don't have Comcast internet. So then a couple of days later, I get an apology letter from Comcast, like, dear valued Comcast customer, we value your business. It's like, I haven't owned a Comcast line since I lived in New Mexico.
Wow.
Yeah. So they did send it to my Yahoo address, which I would have had then. So I guess it was just an accident.
Yeah, we always, you know, kind of make fun of Comcast. But here is one good thing. A guy that I work with lives in the Ebensburg area, and he was home one day, and this Comcast guy just came walking around door to door, kind of doing a survey, you know, like, hey, you know, I see you have a dish. Who do you have for your TV? What do you do for your phone? What do you do for your internet? And the whole point of this guy walking around was to say that Fios is coming to Ebensburg.
Ooh.
Ebensburg is going to be one of the first places around here to get Fios. And he didn't have any details, so he couldn't say it's going to be, you know, 20, 30, 60 megabits. But he did say, you know, there were going to be package deals to get customers to switch. And the prices that he gave would make me switch.
Yeah.
You know, I
remember when the pricing came out for, like, the Baltimore area, and I have some friends down there, and it was, like, awesome. I was like,
yeah, it was only going to be $100 for all three services, TV, internet, phone. Yeah. And I pay a little over $100 just for TV and internet. I don't have a home phone.
Nice.
You know, so that would definitely make me switch.
Yeah, I would definitely be interested in like the maybe like the 15.5 package, 15 down, 5 up.
I would pay for whatever the top one is just because that would be awesome.
Yeah. Well, the only thing is I don't think you can get the top one and have the Fios TV. Because the Fios TV uses some of the bandwidth.
Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah.
But either way, maybe if they don't... I'm sure if they don't give it in the package deal, it's going to be way more expensive. So maybe I'll just keep Dish and get the Fios for the internet. Or maybe it won't even come to Johnstown in the next 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? Maybe I'll move to Evansburg.
I'm holding out for it. I'm not switching to cable.
Yeah, I'm sticking with my WiMAX for as long as I can until Fios comes around. I mean... We need it sometime. It's got to come here sometime.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on. There's a new article out of the Microsoft Applied Sciences Group, which is kind of something, the product is kind of something that we thought we would have a long time ago. This came out of the Student Innovation Contest. And one of the contests that they're having in this is an adaptive keyboard, which is basically, it kind of looks like an iPad.
A little bit. Well, it has keys, though, right?
I don't know if... Oh, yeah. Yeah, it has keys. And above the keys...
It has buttons, unlike Apple products.
Yeah. And above the keys is a display. It's not a big display. It's like it's as wide as the keyboard, but only 3 or 4 inches tall. But still a display. And the point of this adaptive keyboard is that it adapts to whatever you're using. So what appears on the keys can change. You know, if you're playing a video game, you won't see the letters anymore. You'll see, like, the hotkeys for the video game. And the touch screen, it's a touch screen above the keys. So that could be, like, a task switcher, allow you to switch windows. Like, what do you think about this?
Oh, it's kind of neat. I could see some use cases. Like, you know, you fire up Chrome, and you got, like, 10 windows open. And when you switch to Chrome, it puts all the little, like, tabbed windows in the top of the bar. And
right.
You can click each window real quickly.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of uses for this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a keyboard user. I generally like, I mean, I use a mouse and a trackpad, you know, when I'm on a laptop. But I prefer doing as much as I can with the keyboard. And I think having like more buttons on the keyboard may just, it keeps your hands in one place. You're not constantly switching.
Yeah, I totally agree. I put this in quotes, but growing up on Unix, Linux style systems, you know, I got used to using only the keyboard and the mouse only when I have to.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm the same way. If I could have all of the control of a mouse and a keyboard, you know, just keep my hands there, that would be awesome.
Yeah. That's one absolute like new interface I guess it maybe came in Windows Vista, but that I love, and really wasn't a big user of Vista, but I love about Windows 7 is the, you can just type anything you want. Like, you just hit the Windows key and then just start typing.
Oh, so it does that automatic searching of the start menu type deal.
Well, yeah, and, like, registered places in the hard drive, your documents in the libraries,
right.
Music, everything. So it's like, oh, I want to listen to some, like, you know, Bare Naked Ladies right now. And it's like, Windows key, B-A-R, and it's like, bam, it just, like, pops up. You just hit down a couple times and hit enter, and it plays.
Right.
So I love that. Like, it's, I think, I don't even know that, like, is there really a way to do that in OS 10?
I was just going to say Spotlight kind of does that.
Oh, it does? Yeah. Is there like a hotkey to get to it?
I don't know because I don't use it. But if you click in Spotlight in the upper right-hand corner, you can do that, start typing.
Yeah.
But some people have actually made, I believe the program is called Quicksilver, and that gives you a hotkey with a nice little heads-up display that does the same thing. So
yeah, I love that feature.
Yeah.
So any way to keep me on the keyboard more.
Right.
And get some of those awkward mouse movements that I'm always repetitively doing. I would like to get rid of that.
Here's something that I need to say. Mouse gestures, dead. People need to stop making extensions for mouse gestures, and people need to stop building them into operating systems. You know, just moving the mouse pointer sucks enough.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to remember up, down, left, right, top corner, bottom corner, shake it, swiggle to open a program.
Shake it, twist it, bop it.
Seriously. I mean, yeah, mouse. Oh, no mouse.
Yuck.
No mouse. Keyboard only.
Did you say no mas? No mas?
No mas. Okay. I don't speak Spanish. Okay, so we got a couple social networking stories that kind of teased at the beginning of the show. The first one, though, not about Facebook. This one is about Twitter. So I'm sure if you listen to this show, you at least know what Twitter is. So we don't need to explain it. But you might not have a Twitter account because you might not know exactly, you know, how you would use it or why it's useful.
Or you think it's stupid.
That too. But here's the thing about Twitter. There probably is something on there that you want to look at on a daily basis. Maybe it's a store that you go to often and they're always giving out coupons. Or maybe it's a celebrity and you always want to see the pictures they put up or what they're doing. You know, chances,
CNN headline news.
Right. Chances are there's something on Twitter that you want, even if you don't use Twitter. Well, now Twitter has made it so you can get that information without having a Twitter account. You can get it SMS to you on your phone. So what do you think about this? Do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing because now they don't need accounts anymore?
Well, it's just following, right?
It's just following. You can't
interact. If your Twitter stream's not private, everyone can view it on the internet. So what does it matter if your statuses get tweeted to them? And except for the fact that if you, like, I guess it would allow somebody to, like, stalk you easily. Like, if you're, like, posting your Foursquare status to Twitter, and it's like, and since they don't have to poll it, now they get an interrupt when, you know, basically it's like the difference between polling and an interrupt.
Right.
And that now they know when you move, and it's like, oh, on so-and-so move, I go follow them. I'll look at the on move event.
Right. Yeah, so what do you think this has to do with Twitter as a company, that these people don't need to log in and become a user of the service anymore? They can just, you know, vicariously follow these people.
Well, it could open. I mean, I could see some people saying, oh, this is like the end of Twitter, maybe, or like now it's just a corporate feature where we're going to get like advertisements and that sort of thing, or updates, you know, from a product.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to open up Twitter to people that don't really want to be involved, like want to be consumers and not producers.
Right.
And once they do that, they may open up the door to more producers because people are like, oh, I like this, and oh, I like what this person's doing, and I think I could add to, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say about it. Yeah. Initially, you're going to have a lot of people who just, you know, use the service just to watch. They don't actually join.
Yeah.
But then as time goes on, they might think.
Lurkers.
Yeah.
They lurk.
Right. They might think, oh, you know, I really wish I could reply to this person right now. You know, this is so cool. Yeah. So then they might make an account.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think this is a good thing for Twitter, opening it up.
I think one thing I think Twitter should do too is implement a way to sign up for a Twitter account through your phone. Like, not just a consuming one, a producing one. Like, if you text 404, like, new account, right, from a certain phone number, it allows you to, like, it just prompts you with, like, input to send back to it.
Yeah, I mean, how hard would it be to have the 40404 number watch and, you know, if statement. If phone number not in database, look for the word new.
Yeah.
You know, you could just send a text message that says new Sloncak.
Yeah.
And if my phone is not in the database, it would see the word new, realize I want to make a new account, make my username Sloncak, bam, I'm done.
And send you the password back to it.
Right.
Like a temporary one.
Right.
And automatically sign you up for the Twitter, like, on. So then you could just start following people.
Right.
And then when you get home, you can, like, finish the registration.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, that would be great. There are...
Because I don't know how many people I've met that I've been like, oh, I'll set you up a Twitter account. And it's like, you know, I try to go to the Twitter page on my phone.
It's hard,
like,
on the phone.
It's hard, or it's like, it's too tiny, or, like, it's just not working.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are so many, not just Twitter, there are so many other services that I wish I could do things on my phone, and I can't. Because they just don't let you do them. And you wonder why.
I don't know why.
They're losing out on so many more users because of that. But let's get away from Twitter. We have a couple of Facebook stories now. We always, you know, try to point out whenever bad things happen with Facebook. And
because it's fun.
And this one's been going around for quite some time. Hopefully you haven't fallen victim to it. But ever since the like button has come out, people have always wanted the dislike button. Mm-hmm. Facebook has not made it. So
I like the dislike button.
Yeah, so let me just say right now that if you think that you've got a dislike button, you have been scammed, because there is no dislike button. Facebook has not made one. No. And that's the point of this story from Sophos, which is actually a rather large antivirus company. It's the one that a lot of corporations use. So they are, you know, they're not just some podunk antivirus company. But if you see people posting, I just got the dislike button, so now I can dislike all of your dumb posts. LOL, blah, blah, blah. And then they give a URL to the dislike button. You know, that's a scam. Don't click that.
Yeah, don't.
So
there's another one that says, get the official dislike button now. And that's fake, too.
Yeah.
They're all fake. You know, this is a cool example of a really good reason to give people the features they want. So scammers don't use those features to scam your people.
Yeah, and here's the bad thing about it. When Facebook does implement the dislike button, there's not going to be an email. There's not going to be a press release. It's just going to magically show up. Most people aren't even going to realize it's there for the first week or so.
Yeah.
And then you're going to see it. You know, so, yeah, they could get around this right now just by implementing the little thumbs down dislike button.
Yep.
And get it over with.
There it is.
Stupid Facebook.
Simple solution. Give people what they want.
And here's another thing, another article from PC World where Facebook is really giving people what they want. It turns out that this bug has since been fixed, but for a while, if you just randomly searched in the Facebook search box an email, if you tried to log in with an email address that wasn't yours and just put in a password, if the email address was for a valid account, Facebook would show you that person's profile picture, the name, and basically it tells you, hey, this is actually a valid account.
Yeah.
So what people were doing...
And they've got your photo if you hadn't already shared it.
Right. Exactly. So what people were doing is just writing programs to randomly spit email addresses into the Facebook login to see how many real profiles they could dig out of Facebook.
Wow.
You know, this is something that no service should do. You know,
these hackers are so motivated. It's like...
Yeah.
Just so they can send you spam. So they can send you spam about, like, pills and, like, you know, enlargement of certain body parts.
Yeah, and here's the thing. If spam wasn't making them billions of dollars, they wouldn't do it. Well, so you know there are idiots out there clicking on these things and making these spammers money.
They say, though, that really, I don't know if it's billions, but it's the return on investment.
Right.
There's like little investment. You know, like you just basically have to stand up a server.
Yeah, spend an hour writing code.
Spend an hour writing code or download the scripts to do it.
Right.
You send out a couple zillion emails, and if you just get like 0.1% return on that or something, even less. Leo Laporte was talking about this. They had done a study, and it's like a really low percentage of return.
Yeah, it seems like it would not be worth it, but it is.
Yeah. Easy money.
Yeah, seriously. So, like I said, this has been fixed, so don't think you can go, you know, figure out if somebody you're stalking has a Facebook account just by trying to log in as them. But ridiculous. So, the last article we have about Facebook is actually not bashing them. This is very surprising. So last week we talked about, you know, Google talking with Verizon about net neutrality. And since then, we've since learned what Google's actual position was. So I'll say that first before we get into this article. Their position is that wireline networks, basically your cable internet, your DSL, internet that you get via plugging into the wall, should be neutral. There should be no, you know, they say wireline services are fast enough. You don't need to worry about quality of service or throttling anything or shaping traffic. They're fine. We believe in this. We will not mess with wireline services. But Google's stance on wireless internet services, such as WiMAX or LTE or 3G, is that you need to throttle, you need to shape, you need to do all of this stuff that net neutrality is trying to protect against. So that came out within the past week. And Facebook, the article right now from CNN Money, is that Facebook came out and said, yeah, we disagree with you. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the first things in a long time that Facebook has, you know, been on the up and up. Because, I mean...
Yeah, they are. I don't totally disagree with Google's stance right now. I mean, if it's a temporary stance, if we're going to reevaluate these things as, you know, wireless technologies, like WiMAX 2 gets out there and there is no bottleneck, you know?
Yeah, see, I'm taking the other stance. I completely disagree.
Like, well, here's the only reason I'll say why I think it's different, like, or give an example. Take a original, like, digital phone where you could just do text messaging. Imagine if there was no throttling of bandwidth and that thing just got spammed with email, like, every 5 minutes. It would make the connection like useless if it was constantly downloading email. So they have to control that like mechanism, because the devices just don't have the bandwidth. Like, not even like network bandwidth, like just like processing bandwidth.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, but I still think what I worry about is that in doing that throttling, it stifles the innovation. It gives people that false sense of security that, oh, we have these things in place to slow down the traffic. We don't need to move forward as quickly as we should in, you know, boosting wireless speeds.
Yeah, so that's true.
That's what I'm worried about, is that if you start
it'll stagnate.
Yeah, it'll stagnate. So, I mean...
Damn it, Kevin, you're right.
Wow, I'm right. It's one of the few times. But yeah.
So I guess kudos to Facebook for agreeing.
Yeah, seriously. They came out and...
Or disagreeing,
yeah. Yeah, so Google is on the up and up with wireline services, but they want to throttle wireless, and Facebook says, no, you know, don't do that. That's a bad thing to do. And yeah, I guess it depends on, you know, how you look at it, you know, whether you think that's the case. Because it is true that wireless services are slower than wireline services. You know, that is definitely 100% true.
Yeah.
So
what the article fails to talk about is the fact that nobody cares what Facebook has to say.
That's true.
Yeah. It's like, you're just repeating what the EFF is saying.
Right.
So,
but it is good that more companies are hopping on the bandwagon now.
Yeah.
So we need more companies.
But we need companies that people actually care about.
Yeah. So let's see. Who can we get to agree with the EFF?
Twitter.
Ooh, if Twitter does it.
Twitter.
Then it's over.
And like maybe like Dig.
We Apple. Twitter, Apple, Dig,
no,
and Apple.
Apple. Apple can sit. They can take a seat.
Fine. Whatever. That was just directed straight at me.
You just, no, if you want a if you want something with some weight to it, you need a company that has actual customers, like more than like, you know, a couple hundred.
The reason I said Apple is because they're the direct competitor of Google in the mobile phone market.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. So I guess so.
Okay. So moving on, we got some mobile phone stories now. A lot of them about Apple. So these first two kind of go together. So we talked last week about Jailbreak Me, which was the site that the website that you could go to in Safari on your iPhone, slide your finger across it, just like the unlock screen, and wham, bam, unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not unlocked, sorry, jailbroken.
Jailbroken.
Yeah, not unlocked, jailbroken. And that was using the PDF vulnerability. Well, a couple days after that came out, Apple released iOS 4.0.2 to fix that vulnerability. So the jailbreakers, though, you know, they're catching up. Red Snow, you can jailbreak. So as soon as Apple released 4.0.2 that fixed that vulnerability, the people who make Red Snow, like, bam, here, we already jailbroke it. You're done. So what do you think, just your general idea about these people who are making the jailbreaking tools, how fast they are at doing this?
Well, I think you maybe have to, like, look at the speed with which they do it. Maybe in context, really what it probably boils down to is they have these in their back pocket. They've known about these vulnerabilities for a while.
So you think they might have 12 different ways to jailbreak it. And if they block one, they just say, oh, here's the other.
Yeah. And they, you know, they basically know, they probably have a good idea of which ones are going to get patched based on how like easy it is to patch them. And
right. Like if it's something with PDFs, they probably think that's the first one going to go down.
Yeah. I mean, cause like, I mean, you know, Apple, they're just like every other company. They'll be doing some kind of risk analysis on the holes. Like they probably know about the holes themselves, but it's like, you know, you have to rate the probability of the risk being exposed and the impact of it.
Right. You don't have enough people to patch them all right now.
Right. So you multiply those two figures, you give it a weighting, and then guess what? That's the one you're going to throw money at. The one with the highest
right.
return
the highest
on
highest risk.
The highest risk and like easiest to in implement.
Right.
So, you know, they probably just know which ones are going to get patched pretty much, and they probably have a bunch in their back pocket, and they're just like, ha ha ha.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. I don't want to say any more about it because everybody already knows my stance on jailbreaking. Everybody already knows your stance. You know, we've talked about this
I don't think you should do it because it's just, I mean, well, it's not a violation of terms of service anymore, I guess, right? They ruled on that.
Yeah, the DMCA.
Yeah, well, I guess it could still be a violation of the terms of service.
It's
not criminal.
It's not illegal anymore, but it still voids your warranty.
Right.
So you cannot get support from Apple, but you can do it without risk going to jail.
Why would you need support from Apple? Because other stuff just works.
I don't know. Well, okay, you brought that up. Here is something that just happened to me and made me super freaking mad. If you follow my Twitter or Facebook feed, you probably saw this. So I have an iPhone 4, and you know, every time you buy an iPhone, they give you the new wall charger unit that you plug the USB cable. What's that called? There's a word for that.
The USB cable?
No, the actual device that you plug into the wall.
Oh, like the I don't know. I call them wall warts.
Okay, the wall wart.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's an actual word for it.
That, power brick transformer.
Yeah, maybe transformer is the best
Technically, it's not a transformer anymore, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so either way. So in my living room, where I sit, the outlet that is there is a GFI.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I normally plug my laptop, my phone, anything that I have with me that needs electricity, it goes into that GFI. You know, I've lived in this house for, I don't know, 3 years now, always plugged everything in, it's been fine. I get the iPhone 4. When I plug the iPhone 4 into that GFI outlet, within a couple minutes, you start hearing the GFI click, and then bam, it trips. Every single time. This freaked me out because it was like 2 a.m. the one night. I had just gotten home from somewhere, plugged my phone in downstairs, went upstairs into my office, got on the computer, and my house is wired really stupid. So the outlet in the living room is on the same circuit as the lights in the hallway going upstairs, mm-hmm. and the same as the lights upstairs, and sorry, the same as the lights on the stairs, mm-hmm. the same as the lights in the hallway upstairs, and the same as the lights in my bedroom.
Okay.
And I had all those lights on because I was just walking upstairs. It was dark. Sitting in my office, all of a sudden, bam, all the lights in my house go out. I was freaking out.
So your GFI, is it a GFI breaker?
Yeah. It's a GFI. It's on the front. It's the very first thing on that circuit. So if it dies, everything dies.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I see.
And my house is so old, there's no grounding.
Yeah.
So that's why I have GFIs on all these things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's a valid, they recommend you replace two prongs with GFIs.
Yeah. Yeah. So that thing went, my whole house, you know, all the lights shut off. I was freaking out. I'm like, is somebody breaking into my house and cutting my electricity? What's going on? Like, this has never happened before.
So does it do it on any other circuits? Maybe it's just a wonky GFI. I mean, sometimes
it could be. I need to take it to another GFI and try it. Yeah. But I'm afraid to plug it into any other outlet that is not a GFI because it gets really hot. And I'm just wondering if there's something wrong with that, you know, specific wall wart. And the reason I brought up this whole story, we were talking about support on Apple products. You cannot email Apple for support. It is not possible. They only offer phone support.
Well, you can do the forums, though, can't you?
Yeah, you can do the forums, which I did. But, you know, how useful are they? You know, they're not going to get you a new product.
Probably not.
And so I emailed support@apple.com thinking, okay, this is the easiest way. Every company has a support email address. And I just get an auto reply. You know, we're sorry. This did not submit a support request for you. Please go to this link to find out how to get support. You can only call. That made me mad because I don't have time to sit on hold for a half an hour.
Yeah.
So I just haven't gotten support yet.
Hmm.
So that just really makes me mad that Apple does not give support any other way than over the phone.
So how are you charging your phone now?
Through the USB cable plugged into my laptop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So anything that doesn't use that wall wart to charge it.
Can't you just use like an old wall wart?
I don't have one. Because I resell my things with Gazelle every time I get a new one, so I send everything back. But yeah, that's mad at Apple. Come on.
Apple
support. Email support.
Yeah,
they do suck at that. So next article, I believe, is one that you submitted.
Well, this is actually related to the 4.02 update. This is Apple sticks its thumb in the... hold on a second. I just lost the title. Oh, no.
Do you need me to read it? You got it?
No, I got it. Apple sticks its thumb in walled iPhone guard's broken dike. So they had the problem with the iOS 4.01. They patched it in 4.02, and then they broke it again. You know, they were able to break this again. And I guess they have some small fix that may fix that patch, according to this article. But it's not going to fix it for 2G, iPhone 2G and iPhone... or iPod Touch 1G. It won't fix it for those phones. So
are they even releasing things now for those?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I guess not. And I guess this is the danger. Like they have a really short product cycle and they're not supporting you very long, like just a couple years. We're talking like 2007 or 2008 devices.
Yeah, if you have those old devices, you can only use a iOS 3. You can't upgrade to 4
because
it just... On the really old devices, it just plain doesn't work. And on some of the newer but still old devices, it runs like dirt, so people don't want it anyways.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's also iPhone 3G. 3G.
Oh, wow. So that's...
iPhone 3G and 2G, although 2G can't technically run 402, but I guess you can hack it into running.
Right, right.
But, yeah, it's... So 3G... So iPhone 3G is going to remain vulnerable to this.
Yeah, so Apple was really counting on people getting their new products every time they come out.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, with Microsoft... just for an example, now obviously Windows XP has had like its life cycle extended quite a bit, but the original XP, like Service Pack 1, I think it ended in 2010. This year was the last year for support.
Actually, that was Service Pack 2 also.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, they said you need to upgrade to Service Pack 3 if you want Windows
updates. But
that's
10 years, almost 10 years. I mean, that's a pretty long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of these two companies are the two extremes. You have Microsoft, which supports everything for almost ever, and you have Apple, who supports it for maybe a year or two.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, and technically, Microsoft is still supporting it, because all they're saying is that if you have Service Pack 2, we're not going to give you any more patches.
Right.
So you have to get up to 3, then we'll give you the patches.
Right.
So just patch it with this patch, and then we'll give you new patches.
Right. There's still an upgrade path.
Yeah.
Whereas with these older Apple products, there's not. You're just screwed.
They're locking you out.
Yeah.
That's bullcrap.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, it's... You wonder if... I don't know. I think there needs to be a compromise somewhere in the middle. But on, you know, Apple's side, this is something that they need to do to keep up with innovation at the rate that they are. And on Microsoft's side, they don't want to lose their customers because they force people out of something. So, yeah, it's a balancing act. And I don't want to say who's right because I don't know who's right. Obviously, you would think Microsoft's right because they have the bigger share.
Yeah, they do, at least at the moment.
Yeah, as far as the desktop market goes.
Yeah, and they're still, I mean, their profits are still higher, but.
Yeah, so getting away from Apple now, or we might be comparing this to Apple, but Dell has come out with what some people are calling, you know, Dell's attempt at the iPhone killer, which is the Dell Streak. And the Dell Streak, you can actually pre-order it now.
It doesn't run naked through your neighborhood, just so everyone knows.
Oh, that's the only reason I wanted it.
It's a streak, not a streaker.
So it is a cell phone. They are marketing it as a mini tablet device because it's bigger than an iPhone. It's, what is it, like a 5-inch or 6-inch display? It's a bigger display than anything out there right now. So it's kind of like a mini...
4.3 inch? Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry.
No,
that's the Droid X.
Yeah, they're talking about the Droid X there. Yeah, I can't... 5-inch.
Okay.
Yeah, 5-inch capacitive multi-touch. So it is bigger than anything else out there right now.
It's giant.
It is giant. Yeah, if you hold it in your hand, it's giant. And it's going to probably stretch out your pocket. But it is not just a tablet like the iPad. It is a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it runs Android. What do you think about this? A, that it's a kind of mini tablet / cell phone. And B, that Dell is getting into this market to try to, you know, take some profit away from Apple.
I mean, Dell's been in the market before. They used to have that. What was it called? The Dell, like, something 3, M3, or...
Yeah, they did have that.
X3.
It didn't last long.
No, it didn't. So they've done this pocket PC stuff type thing before. I'm impressed. The specs on it are pretty cool. I'm not happy that it's AT&T only.
Yeah, there is something going on in the industry that AT&T keeps getting all of these new devices.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
Like, Windows Phone 7, all of the new devices, AT&T. How is this possible?
They must just have really good terms on their contracts for the companies producing the phones.
So. Either that, or just kickbacks, or, you know, something illegal going on.
Yeah, could be. But it's definitely, the specs are impressive. I like the idea of a bigger screen. Like I was out checking the Droid X out, and it's really, I like having that bigger screen. It's nice, but it's not. I found that the Droid X wasn't quite as snappy as the Incredible.
Here's the thing. If, you know, the Droid X is made by Motorola, the Incredible is made by HTC. If the Droid X would be able to run HTC Sense.
Yeah, Sense UI.
I think it would be good. I think that's what would make the Droid X good instead of Motoblur.
Well, I mean, the UI is... I do like Sense. It's cool. But I was just... Performance-wise, who knows? Maybe they'll update it and it'll be a little faster. But
well, that's what I mean. Like, the processor and everything, it's all pretty much the same. on those two devices.
Yeah, it uses an ARM derivative. It's a TMAP like 8301. I can't remember. No, 3460 or something like that.
I don't know the exact thing.
It's like a 1 gigahertz Snapdragon-based processor.
Yeah, so my thought is that it's the MotoBlur software that's making it not snappy.
It could be, yeah. It could be that they did a lot of power management tuning on it. So, but this 5-inch display, like for me, it's like I like having this like slightly larger device. It makes it more usable. I don't really want to carry an iPad around.
Yeah, I was actually looking into buying something bigger, an iPad style device, because I'm starting to do more photography, and I have my portfolio on my iPhone, and it works great, you know, showing people the photos, but it is kind of small. If you're trying to show more than one person your work to try to get new business. Mm-hmm. So I was looking into, you know, tablet style device, maybe an iPad, but they're way too expensive or some other Android.
Well, I mean, you can get into an iPad for like what?
$600?
$499, I thought was the base one.
I thought it was $599. Either way, maybe it is $499. Either way, that's still a lot. That's more than I want to pay for something that I'm only going to use to show pictures.
Well, I mean, technically though, like a phone even costs way more than that, you know, but it's subsidized.
Right.
So...
Sorry, I almost just died.
Really, seriously, I almost had to give him the high five.
No CPR, please.
Oh, I use a bag.
Oh, good. But either way, yeah, I think this is a cool device. I wish I could get my hands on it. I don't know that any stores are going to carry this that you could just walk in and play with it since it comes from Dell.
It'll probably be in the AT&T stores.
Do you think?
I would imagine, eventually. Maybe not right away.
Yeah, so if it does come there, I'm definitely going to go play with it. And see if, you know, maybe this is what could pull me away from the iPhone.
Yeah. And what's it run? 2.2?
Yes, I believe it's 2.2.
Oh, wait, no. Ooh, wait. It runs 1.6, and a 2.2 update's promised for later in the year.
Oh.
Come on, guys.
I just assumed that it was already running 2.2.
You got to release on at least 2.
Especially since Google is now talking about not only 3.0, but 3.1 or 3.2, whatever they're going to call the next one after 3.0.
Because, you know, here's the other crazy thing. I don't know if people will know about this, but there's that Bluetooth bug. It's anything before 2.2, like 2.1 and earlier. There's a bug with the Bluetooth in all Android phones that the voice activation feature of a Bluetooth device can't activate the voice activation on the phone.
I do remember hearing about that.
Yeah. So, like, for me, it's like 2.2 or bust. You know, I won't switch until at least that. But,
right.
I mean, you'd think at least be 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, because this device, hardware-wise, looks awesome.
Yeah, it does look cool.
To have it being released with 1.6, Android 1.6, is kind of a little Debbie Downer.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? You know, there's no reason that you couldn't just make it work right off the bat. But either way, the Dell Streak, definitely something to look out for. $300 with the contract with AT&T, $550 without it, if you want to buy it, you know, unlocked, no carrier. So, decently priced. Comparable with the Incredible, with the iPhone, with a lot of the Droid X. So definitely something to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just talking about the voice actions on Android phones. And this article from Computer World gives us a first look at some of the new voice actions that are going to be in Android 2.2 and future. And I got to tell you, these are what I wish my phone had. So listen to some of these commands that you can do on your newer Android phones. Send text to send a text message, and you can do everything. Send text to person, hi, I'm going here right now, bye. You know, all one command, it'll do it. Listen to, it'll play music. Call, it'll call a person. Send email to, you can compose an email via voice command. You know, go to for a website. Navigate or directions to open up the maps and give you, you know, GPS turn-by-turn directions, because Android has that, or map of, and it'll open up the maps program. This is awesome. Like, don't you wish every phone had this?
Yeah, it's really cool. What was the one here I love. I love the one command, note to self. The anchor of the news from SNL, Norm MacDonald, right?
Oh.
Yeah, note to self. I love the note to self one. I think that's great. I'm wondering if that's even just a little bit tongue-in-cheek for them.
You wonder how many people will accidentally leave themselves notes just because they say that in normal conversation.
I love that one. That one's really cool.
Note to self, joke did not go over.
These features have existed for a while on BlackBerry. I don't know, there's obviously the call ones, you know, you can call. I think most phones have those.
Yeah, most phones have the call.
Yeah, but BlackBerry, it's not a native thing, but there's an application you could download called Vlingo. And Vlingo, it works really, really well.
I think you showed me that. Was it like a year ago? It was a long time ago.
When I got my BlackBerry, one of the first applications, I fell out of favor with it because they kept they upgraded it every week. And I'm like, I'm not paying the $99. It was $9 every time you upgrade. Yeah.
Wait, they charge you for upgrades?
Well, it was I think the interim upgrades, if you went from 2.1 to 3.2 or 2.2 to 2.3, but then if you jump the version to 3 or 4, you pay it again. So
yeah, even the,
I can't remember if it was maybe it was $4.99, I don't remember,
but still, yeah, even the Twitter client for the iPhone, they did that. You got the incremental updates for free, but then once they jump to the new version, it's bam, you got to pay.
Yeah,
come on.
But Vlingo was a really well written app and it worked really well. The voice prediction, I think what it did is it would record you, and it sent the voice prediction up to the internet, and then it characterized it, sent it up, and then it would return a result of text over the, that way it didn't have to have a lot of smarts built into it.
Right, no processing power on the phone.
Right.
Yeah, these would be awesome. I really wish that I could send text messages, via a Bluetooth headset, just speaking. That would be awesome. Cool. Okay, so this next article is another one that you submitted.
So basically, it looks like Android is moving into the number 3 spot in smartphone sales. And interestingly enough, smartphones themselves lead mobile phone sales. They're becoming the largest percentage of mobile phone sales, and Android's number 3 now.
Did you see the list of what were above Android? Can you really believe that?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's pretty well known. Symbian is the most popular, and BlackBerry is number 2.
Really?
Yeah.
I would not have thought Symbian.
Right. Well, Symbian, overseas, it's huge. I think mainly, in Europe and Japan, it's giant.
Yeah, I definitely expected RIM to be number 1.
Right. Well, the thing is, though, I read some other articles that say they're starting to question whether or not they can classify Symbian as a modern smartphone OS anymore.
It's definitely not modern.
Yeah, it's getting a little long in the tooth. The newer versions don't have as many features as they thought it would. There's still a lot. There's a big Symbian lover crowd out there. There's a big fanboy crowd for Symbian.
Yeah, that's something that has always made me wonder. All these people who love the Nokia N95 and all of these not-so-smart smartphones.
Yeah.
What is drawing them to this? Do they just not have the other phones? Or are they dumb that they don't realize they can get these things?
I don't know. I mean, it could be form factor. I still think, for rapid messaging, BlackBerries are still king. If you're firing off emails and text messages all day long, it's really powerful for that.
Right. Most business people prefer them for that reason.
It's just easier to there's good spell checker in it, and it's smart that way, and I like it. But Symbian has its followers, and they're really heavily supported overseas.
And speaking of BlackBerry, this wasn't on the list of things to talk about, but the BlackBerry Torch. Did you see anything about that?
Yeah, that's the new touchscreen slider.
That's the new iPhone with a slide out keyboard for BlackBerry.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty popular. I mean, it's going to launch with iPhone or BlackBerry OS 6.0.
It's going to launch with iOS 6.0.
Oh, yuck. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
But yeah, that actually, it looks like a cool phone, but I'm totally against physical keyboards. Now that I've made the switch to all virtual keyboard, I hate going back to phones with physical keyboards.
I like them still, but I think they're starting to cram them and make them so small and so tiny and very little key throw, and they're just starting to get useless.
I think it makes me slow. It makes me slower because you actually have to put pressure to push down the buttons.
Yeah.
Like every once in a while, I'll grab, you know, the phones from the people I work with, and they have physical keyboards on their phones. They have older, like BlackBerry, the really old ones that corporations give out,
yeah,
and whatever.
Like BlackBerry 1.0.
Yeah, seriously. And I'll try to like just randomly send text messages or emails, and I suck.
Yeah.
Like I just can't
do
it.
Well, it could just be getting used to it. I mean, it's kind of like, remember the old like IBM, PS2 keyboards?
I had one of those.
The heavy duty like clickety clickety ones.
The clicky keyboards were the best.
Or were they like, what was the like 8510s, I think, or something like that, or
I don't know.
Or 8815. I can't remember the model number of like the
computer that I had was actually called the IBM PS2.
Yeah, but that keyboard, if somebody knows, email Kevin what the model of like the really famous IBM clicky keyboards are. Like the ones with like the real springs in it and the keys are all caps.
Yeah, when you depressed it, it was like ching ching ching
ching
ching.
It's like one of the last made positive feedback keyboards, meaning when you feel that click, you for certain made contact. Like go back to using one of those after using a laptop, and it's like hard to type until you get used to it again.
Yeah, I love those keyboards. I wish I still had one.
Yeah. Oh, I had one, but it lost a couple keys, and I think I threw it out.
Yeah. When I worked at the last company that I worked for, I kept one of those around for my machine just so I had it because they were so nice.
Yeah, there's a website that makes USB ones now too, I think.
Really?
They're not actual IBM ones. I think they
But they're still the clicky keyboards.
I think they either bought the manufacturing dies for them or something. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, even if there was a patent, it's probably over with now because they're so old.
Yeah.
So anybody could probably buy it or license it to make them. The one keyboard that I really want is the Optimus.
Oh, it's the Model M, I think. The Model M keyboard.
Oh, Model M.
I don't know what I was thinking
Interesting.
About.
Interesting. But I really want to try the Optimus Maximus, I believe. That's the keyboard with no letters. All the keys are just blank.
That's pretty crazy.
Well, I mean, it forces you to learn how to type if you don't know how to already because you can't look down and see the letters. But it's really expensive, like hundreds of dollars. So definitely not going to buy it. But let's get away from keyboards for a while. We've got one more article to talk about, and just going to be a quick one. Just pointing out that there is a Trojan going around for Android devices. And it's a pretty bad one because it's an SMS Trojan, a text message Trojan. It disguises itself, you know, as a program that you can install on your machine. On your phone. Tricks you into installing it because you really want the program. But what it does is it will randomly and a lot send out text messages to those short codes that you get charged for. It's like if you've ever voted for like American Idol or something, you text to 90909 or something and you get charged a dollar for that text. Well, this Trojan does that automatically and a lot.
Ouch.
Now here's the problem with that. Well, obviously that's a problem, but the bigger problem is that you can't just get your money back by complaining to your company and saying this is fraudulent because Verizon or whoever your cell provider is doesn't get the money. When you send text messages to these short codes, the money goes directly from your account to the person who owns that short code, bypassing your cell provider. So if you get this, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Yeah. So it's the list is it's listed as AndroidOS.fakeplayer. That's what they're calling the ooh, what was that? Plucking the strings on the
sorry.
On the mic mount. But yeah, so what was the name of it? What was the article doesn't say what the name of the application was so that we could actually tell you.
SMS AndroidOS FakePlayer.a?
Well, that's what they're classifying the virus or the Trojan as.
Oh.
But like what the name appears in the OS marketplace so we can tell people what not to download.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't say. I kind of wish they would. But either way, yeah, don't download any music players that aren't from legit companies, because that's basically what this is. It's a music player that does this in the background. So, you know, keep the native music player, only download them from, you know, real player or legit companies. But yeah, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. That's bad news for Android.
Yes. This is kind of where I wish that they would have more of a Apple style app store. I don't want to start a whole argument on that, but at least somebody looking through the applications to say...
He doesn't want to start an argument because he'd lose.
I probably would. I already won once tonight. I'm just going to keep riding that wave. Okay, so anything else you wanted to talk about? Anything else that came up this week?
No, that's about it.
All right. So there have already been a couple good things that have come out that we're going to talk about on the next show. So I'm not going to tease anything. I'm not going to tell you about them. I'm just going to let it go, and you're going to have to tune in next week.
Or they could always go check out the tags on Delicious.
Yeah, they could just go to Delicious and look at the articles.
Well, actually, you'd see all of them. You wouldn't know which ones you were going to talk
That's
about.
Right. Yeah. So you're just going to have to tune in.
Exactly.
And
tune in.
Last thing before we end the show, I just wanted to point out, thank you to all of our listeners. We hit a milestone, 100 viewers, 100 listeners. A while back, ever since episode 5 or 6 is when I wrote the code to start keeping track of downloads. So obviously the numbers for previous to episode 5 are skewed because they didn't track anything. But from episode 6 on, we have now hit the 100 viewer mark. So thank you to everybody listening. You know, I wish that all of those 100 people would start commenting.
Yeah.
You know, yell at me, tell me I'm an idiot, that I shouldn't be talking about this stuff. You know, suggest stories, submit them on Delicious. As always, if you want us to talk about a story, go on to, you know, make an account on Delicious, tag it as Slongcast015. That's for next week's episode 15. And like Ryan was saying, if you want to...
Or you could tag it like Slongcast like 182, and we'll do it in a couple years.
Right. Yes, that would actually be weird. We come to episode 182, and it talks about, you know, the iPhone 3. Like, what? It's not new.
That's not new. What the heck?
So yeah, if you want us to talk about an article, tag it on Delicious Slongcast015, and we'll hit it on next week's episode. If you want to see what either myself or Ryan are doing in our lives, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. My username is Slonkack. You can find Ryan on Facebook and Twitter, username Ryan Lancey. And again, thank you for listening. Comment on what you like and dislike about the show. And I hope you guys have a good rest of the week.